All right, we are Guns of Woolsey, and this is Guns of Brixton.
At your front door, how you gonna come? Your hands on your head or on the trigger of your gun? When the law breaks through, how you gonna go? Shut down on the pavement or waiting in death row? You can crush us, you can bruise us, but you'll have to answer too. Oh, the guns of Brixton. You laugh, you like it well, but surely your time will come, as in heaven, as in hell. They know it means no mercy, they caught him with a gun. No need for the Black Mariah, wave goodbye to the Brixton sun. You can crush us, you can bruise us, but you'll have to answer too. Oh, the guns of Brixton.
All right, top it out, top it out.
Like Ivan, torn under the Brixton sun. His game is called surviving, and at the end it's the harder they come. Where you can crush us, you can bruise us, you'll have to answer too. Oh, the guns of Brixton. You can crush us, you can bruise us, you can even shoot us. But oh, the guns of Brixton.
Oh, oh, 101.5 UMFM. This is At Large, a special International Clash Day edition, and we just heard the Guns of Woolsey with the Guns of Brixton. And I am joined by station manager Jared McKediak on the phone. He's celebrating his International Clash Day cleaning up puke, which is a specially punk thing to do. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. How are you?
I'm good. It's too bad you're missing out on the fun at the station, but you can have fun with International Clash Day wherever you are in the world.
Yeah, that's true.
In fact, 101 stations in 15 different countries apparently so far participating. Things started in Australia yesterday, technically, but we're celebrating it here today, and then also kind of pushing through to the weekend, February 10th at the West End Cultural Center. We're happy to be partnered in the 15th anniversary Joe Strummer tribute. Guns of Woolsey that we just played are going to be playing at that show, along with the Farrell Brothers and more. Guns of Woolsey, kind of a Winnipeg supergroup of sorts, members of Noble Thieves, Vibrating Beds, Kids on Fire, and more. Pretty exciting stuff, and they did a live session we're going to be playing some more tracks from, and that's going to be up on our website as well. Tom Woodward, the host of At Large, sadly has to miss International Clash Day to do some family concerns, and so shout out to Tom, who I know loves the Clash and was excited to do this. But B, instead, we're going to talk to a variety of Winnipeg music heads and get them to pick their favorite Clash tracks. And to get the ball rolling, we're going to get Jared to pick his track.
So it's like, I guess, trying to pick your favorite child. I've been in love with the Clash since I was probably 11 or 12 years old. And I've got lots of favorite Clash songs. And so it was tough to narrow it down.
Yeah, but at least with your kids, you can do a coin flip.
Yeah, exactly. But I decided to go with something from their debut record, came out in 77. And it's one that I've played on my show quite a bit. And it's usually when our friends to the south in the United States do something silly.
So you break this one out all the time.
Yeah, obviously. It's become a little bit more prevalent in the last 16 to 18 months. So I'm choosing I'm So Bored with the USA.
So you mentioned that you got into the Clash when you were about 12.
Yes.
You know, you grew up in small town Manitoba.
Yeah.
Was punk a big thing in Carmen?
Not at all.
Not at all.
Not at all. There were... a few folks who definitely sort of wore that on their sleeve. I remember a guy named Corey Clark who sported a pretty stellar mohawk for a while. The reason why I got into the Clash, I mean, they had a few tracks that did get played on sort of commercial classic rock radio.
Mm-hmm.
You would hear Train in Vain every once in a while. Janie Jones every once in a while, Rock the Casbah. But my first introduction to the Clash came through the older brother of one of my good friends growing up. He had a mixtape that he would often play while we were hanging out at their house, and it had Should I Stay or Should I Go Now on it. And I just remember asking him, hey man, that song's really cool. Who's it by? And then just kind of looking back into it, and you know, the rest, as they say, is kind of history. And got into the Clash and have never really gotten out of it.
It's funny that that song, Should I Stay or Should I Go, still resonates with like teenagers today. Our med school student Alexis, who just started hosting Theme Party, played that track yesterday on her show.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's weird because it's that song in particular, I think, has experienced kind of a resurgence in the last 6 months with kids of that age, and I know definitely with my daughter because it was featured pretty prominently in Stranger Things.
Right.
Yeah, and so my kids, because of that, know all the words to that song.
That's a good thing.
Yeah, definitely.
Let's hear it for the music cue folks who put licensed songs and put them in movies for helping kind of keep some of these things going.
Exactly.
So we're gonna get to your pick, and then we're gonna be talking to a variety of people. We got Dom Lloyd, Clash super fan, coming up right after this, and more great stuff here on International Clash Day. Keep it locked on 101.5 UMFM for more of the great legacy of the Clash.
I'm
All right, well, we are back here on a special edition of At Large for International Clash Day In. We are talking to a bunch of local folks, getting their favorite picks from The Clash and Joe Strummer's discography. And joining us now, Program and Arts Development Manager at the Winnipeg Arts Council and former Artistic Director at the West End Cultural Center, Dominic Lloyd. How are you doing, Dom?
I'm great, Michael. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. So we're getting folks to kind of like reminisce about whether they can pinpoint when they first heard The Clash or which record or which song first kind of resonated with them. Do you happen to recall?
I probably can't tell you which is the first one I ever heard, but, there was a time in my life in the late mid 80s when I was in high school in Whitehorse, Yukon, and we were, devouring every single punk rock record that we could find, which weren't that easy to find in Whitehorse in the mid 80s. But definitely The Clash was one of the bands that was easily obtainable and, just really resonated. Really, I just loved it from the second I heard it.
Yeah, I mean, I have to imagine getting records up there. Like, was there an actual record shop, or did people kind of like bring stuff up from down south on like trips, or how did you guys get new punk stuff?
A little bit of both, really. I mean, it was the era mostly of the cassette tape and going down to Eric's home entertainment center and bothering the guy every Tuesday when the new releases came out to see what was there and spending every spare penny we had on tapes. Lots of times just things that looked cool, like had a great cover or that had a cool sounding name. I often say that I discovered a ton of great new music that way. I also still own a lot of duds.
Mm, yes, that's.
But there were a few people. it's funny to think about. Like, there was a couple of people that had these massive collections of punk rock records that we would go over to their house, and I don't even know how we managed to get invites, but we'd go over and we'd here's a guy who has Dead Kennedys records, and we'd go over to listen to the Dead Kennedys, and then we'd listen to Peter and the Test Tube Babies, and then we'd listen to, the Saints, and so it was just like a rabbit hole that we would go down. So you couldn't always get a hold of that stuff, but there were a few people that could offer you entry into that world of punk rock. But The Clash is something that you could pick up at the record store.
That was kind of a universal thing. You didn't have to go to one person's house to hear all this stuff.
Yeah, we all had copies of London Calling and Nevermind the Bollocks.
Sure enough. So I want to get you to pick a track, and if you can tell me why you're picking that track in particular, if there's something resonant about that song for you.
Well, the one that I picked is Bank Robber, and I picked it for a couple of reasons. One is because one of the things about The Clash that sat with me even in those days and continues to this day is that there were so many different styles of music that they incorporated, and it wasn't just this sort of angry, thrashy, four-banging punk rock. There was a lot more layer and nuance to it, and certainly they're influenced by the reggae records and the dub records and those kind of things. Kind of made me appreciate not only punk rock, but a whole lot of different styles as well. And Bank Robber, of course, is probably, I'd say, one of the most famous sort of reggae-infused tunes, which fast-forward generations to my days at the West End Cultural Center when Matt Henderson, then of Bacteria Buffet Records, and I brought in Mikey Dredd, the producer of that song, to perform at the West End. And he literally just phoned up out of the blue and said, "It's Mikey Dredd. I want to come to Winnipeg." And so we put a band together for him. We got JFK and the Conspirators to learn a bunch of Mikey Dredd tunes. And he played what was really one of my favorite shows in my days at the West End. And so his association with Bank Robber and with what is my all-time favorite band in the history of the universe, The Clash, is why I picked that tune. It's also because it's just a great record. It's one that I sang to my firstborn daughter every day for the first 2 years of her life, trying to get her to go to sleep. That was her lullaby, and she still listens to it even now. And also, it's a great, there's a couple of great covers of it. Greg McPherson has done a really awesome cover of it. And I would say about 10 years ago in Calgary, I saw Chumbawamba perform it a cappella. And they just did a fantastic job of it. And of course, Chumbawamba are all olds now too, just like the remaining members of the Clash. But so it's a song that makes me think of a lot of different things in life, but certainly because The Clash is the greatest rock and roll band of all time.
That is some exceptional resonance to that track. Dom, thanks very much for your selection, and enjoy the rest of International Clash Day.
Thanks for having me on, Michael.
Love to live that fake, but he loved to steal your money. Some
All right, well, we are back here on International Clash Day, celebrating the music of The Clash and the legacy of Joe Strummer. And we're joined by UMFM's newest host, Alexis Bisbalco, host of Theme Party, Tuesdays 1 to 2 p.m. So, Alexis, you're our youngest programmer.
Yeah.
Still in your teens, but a fan of punk music, no less. Yeah. And a lot of the folks I've talked to came to punk music in their teens. And so things are a little fresher for you. I'm curious when you first heard The Clash.
So The Clash, I think everyone pretty much knows the song Should I Stay or Should I Go? And that's kind of always kind of existed to me.
Mm-hmm.
But I first kind of like actually got interested in The Clash around, I believe, like grade 7-ish. And then I kind of dropped it for a while because I was more into like aggressive, a little bit more aggressive sounding music.
Mm-hmm.
But then I kind of picked it back up again about like last year.
Now, I know that you've said like your parents have both, you know, influenced some of your music. Did your parents have any Clash records, or was it something that you'd kind of found on your own?
No, it was something more that I found on my own because my parents are into slightly different things. But when I do play it in the car, my mom's all like, oh, I love The Clash.
Sure enough. Now, you played Should I Stay or Should I Go on your show yesterday.
Yeah.
I think it was your second track of your first show.
Yeah.
Like you said, that's a song you said felt like it always existed in your life. But that's not your pick today.
No, it's not. My pick today is I Fought the Law, and it's just kind of one of those songs that I really love because it's kind of soft at some points, but then it's also like really good for getting me motivated, which not a lot of things can do, surprisingly.
There you go. So this is your pick me up song?
Yeah.
Right on. This is International Clash Day and I Fought the Law, Alexis's pick. Tune in Tuesdays 1 to 2 p.m. to hear her show Theme Party next week, Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
Right on.
Rock, rock the Clash City Rockers!
Yes, I wanna move the town to the Class City Rockers. Need a little jump of electrical shockers. Berlin town, if you really wanna knock us. Nothing says the pressure of the Class City Rockers. You see the rhythm come down the escalator. Listen to the two-train accelerator. Then you realize that you gotta have a purpose. So this place is gonna knock you out sooner or later.
So don't shut your mouth. Oh, every time you enjoy it, oh, then go home. The money you got, and I wanna look a fire. Everybody can try. A bottle to the arrows that poke up in the sky. Burn in the suburbs with the app closed eyes. You won't succeed unless you try.
Go, don't complain.
I'm what you use to shut your mouth.
Shut it up.
Never
tell
you to enjoy it.
Oh,
then go home. The money you got. Yeah,
yes, I wanna move the town to the Class City Rockers. Need a little jump of electrical shockers. Better leave town if you want it, want it, nothing. Nothing says the pressure of the Class City Rockers.
You will be the room. Say the world. Stop saying you. Come on and show me.
Welcome back to International Clash Day here on 101.5 UMFM. Speaking of being on UMFM, Witch Police Radio airs Sunday nights at midnight, and Sam Thompson from Witch Police joins me by phone. How are you doing, Sam?
Not bad. How are you?
I am very well. I'm enjoying all the great Clash reminiscences and tracks we've been playing today. So
for sure.
let's get to yours here. When did you first come to the Clash? I know you're a big reggae fan. Is that kind of your entryway?
No, it's kind of the reverse of that, actually. I grew up listening to The Clash. My dad had most of their albums on vinyl when I was a kid, and so it was always kind of around. But I sort of got into them when I was a teenager. I was really into punk rock, and I was also sort of starting to get into reggae at the same time, but it almost wasn't cool to be listening to reggae. And The Clash, you know, whether it was doing reggae covers or just experimenting with stuff like that, kind of made it was a good in to sort of push me more into reggae, if that makes sense.
So you could play this with friends and they wouldn't give you grief about it versus...
Right, exactly, because it was a punk band. So I was like, oh, okay, well, this is cool to listen to. And like this weird Jamaican record that no one knows anything about maybe is not so cool, but because I was going through that route, it sort of made sense and it fit in well with what I was already kind of getting into.
Right. So their experimentation with like dub and stuff like that, now looking back as, you know, someone who's immersed themselves in mm-hmm. sort of the reggae and dub stuff, like, how does that hold up? Like, do you feel that they were really kind of at the edge of things, or?
I love it personally. I think that, I mean, obviously it's a very different sound than the I guess more authentic Jamaican stuff, if you want to call it that. But I think that they did something really unique with it, and it really, it holds up as being genuine. I think there's a lot of people who can maybe take a style or a sound that maybe isn't their cultural style, and they can kind of do it poorly because they're trying too hard to imitate. But I think that they took the actual kind of important bits of it and reworked it into their own, through their own experiences and their own sound. So to me, it's something that almost stands alone. It's not necessarily reggae, it's not necessarily punk, but it takes the best elements of both and makes something new. And I think that probably influenced a lot of the bands that came after them that also did that and also kind of turned those two things into something further.
You say the important bits. Can you kind of like pinpoint what they took that, you know, you feel was the important part?
Yeah, I think it's just like, for lack of a better word, I think it's the soul of it. I think they it's just, it comes across as genuine rather than coming across as trying to do something. They kind of, what the heart of the music is and what kind of, what drives it. And it's more so, more than just playing the notes in the right spot. It's kind of, I mean, for a genre that's especially big on repetition and on, you know, a lot of people's problems with reggae, they think it's too samey and everything sounds the same and it bores them. But for people who are really into it, that's the opposite is true. And I think that the Clash tapped into what makes it stand out, what makes it interesting and what makes it drive forward. And I think by adding the punk, their own punk expression to it, kind of increased that even. So, I mean, they figured out what's good about it and what they liked about it and added the speed, added the kind of aggression to it, and it really works.
Right. Now, you mentioned your dad had the records. Do you know what his favorite Clash record was?
London Calling.
Yeah.
That's one I heard the most as a kid. We had London Calling and actually Sandinista were pretty popular in my house, along with a lot of other stuff. But those two, I kind of, when I became old enough to have my own record collection, I sort of inherited them from him. I still have his copies of those two, and I'm sure he's rebought them on CD or whatever format now, but I still listen to his old copies of his albums pretty regularly.
Right on. Now, I'm going to get you to pick a song from the Clash, or, I mean, we've had a few people pick Joe Strummer post-Clash career, but
right.
If you can give me, like, context about why you're picking that song in particular. I mean, it doesn't have to necessarily be your favorite song, but the
sure.
song with the reason you're picking it.
I think that I would like to go with their cover of Police and Thieves. And I'm not sure if that's been picked yet, but the reason I like it so much is kind of the reason I mentioned earlier, is that it was a really good introduction to figuring out who the original artist was. You know, before the internet and stuff, you look at the liner notes and realize, oh, that's a Junior Mervyn song.
Mm-hmm.
And then going to hear the Junior Mervyn song and then realizing that how great that is on its own. And both versions are really phenomenal, and I kind of rate them both as highly as each other. And it's just sort of an example of, I guess, the way that they could take reggae and really make it something different, but still keep the energy, I guess, if that makes sense.
Had you
heard it? Was sort of an intro for me to get into deeper stuff, because that's, you know, that's how we all found new music back then. It was, you look at who wrote the songs and the liner notes and you go seek that out.
So you hadn't heard of Junior Mervyn before you heard
it? I hadn't, no. I mean, that my first introduction to that song was the Clash version.
Right.
Just because I hadn't got really deeply into reggae at that point. And that definitely led me to, okay, I need to seek out the original. And I love the original. And then that just took me on all these other kind of wormhole of deeper and deeper into reggae, where I still kind of sit now.
Well, it's a great pick, and coincidentally, earlier today, we released a video of the live session of Guns of Wolseley, the Winnipeg group comprised of
nice.
Members of Noble Thieves, Kids on Fire, and a few other bands doing that. They did a video of it, so folks can go online, UMFM's Facebook and Twitter, and check out that video. But for now, check out The Clash and Police and Thieves. Thanks for joining us, Sam. Enjoy
yeah,
the
no
rest
problem.
Of the Clash Day. We'll be right back. All right. Well, it is International Clash Day, marking the unfortunate and early demise of Joe Strummer. But we are here for celebration and great music, and we are joined. No surprise, he's a Clash fan. If you listen on Friday mornings, I think you wouldn't be surprised to hear Cretin Rob is a Clash fan. So we've got him here to talk a little bit about his reminiscence of the Clash and get him to pick a track.
I love the Clash, but I was not an early adopter of the Clash because I was just a kid when the Clash, the heyday, yeah. But and then the first Clash songs I heard, it was like the only song that the radio stations would play was "Rock the Casbah" back in the day.
Is that like 92 and?
Thing that I would hear. But then, so I didn't really know anything. But what got me into it, I got into a garage rock guy called Billy Childish, and he had several projects: the Pop Rivets, the Mighty Caesars, the Head Coats, and he covered Career Opportunities. And I looked up I was looking at the liner notes. I saw that it was by the Clash, and I was like, the Clash that rocked the Casbah band. I wasn't a big fan of the Rock the Casbah song, so I bought the first Clash album because it was in the back in the day when you could just go to a record store in a mall. They always had, $2 for $10 or $2 for $15.
And that was one of those.
And that was one of those twofers. So yeah. I bought that and a Replacements album, Tim. So it was like,
that's a good day of music.
That was like $2 for $15. I was like, okay, let's do that. And this is and just because those are two kind of classic albums that I didn't really know. So I went home and listened to both of them. And man, just I was like, there's so much more to this band. And then, of course, I got the whole discography. And and what a crazy ride that the Clash took me on throughout those, Sandinista, you got to listen to that over a few days.
It's a lot
really.
To process.
It is. It really is. But the first Clash album, starting with Janie Jones, and oh my God, there's so many classics on that. Prodex Blue is on that, which is, I think, is probably the only song that I can think of off the top of my head, which involves a guy going to get a condom.
I'm sure there's some sort of R&B song that involves that, but yeah.
There's
Ralph Tresvant has done one.
And Janie Jones, another one, like Career Opportunities, about, Janie Jones is telling your boss off, which really appealed to me at the time and,
still does. Yeah, yeah.
But Career Opportunities is just, that song just stuck. It's so catchy and the lyrics are so clever and it's really, blue collar themes that they stuck throughout their career. They're working guys and just like we are. And yeah, so Career Opportunities for me, that's the song that I'd like to play on this special, and I hope everyone else gets even a little bit out of it like I did.
Fingers crossed someone out there just hasn't gotten around to listening to the Clash and they hear something from this today. Mm-hmm. And then, I mean, maybe they go on YouTube. Obviously now you don't necessarily go to a physical record store and buy a 2 for $15, but maybe you listen to that YouTube stream of that full length record or something.
And in one hand, the radio where it like rocked the Casbah, kind of got sick of it and didn't really dig that song so much. But on the other hand, the radio introduced me to the Clash because when I was a teenager, there was Brave New Waves hosted by Brent Bambury was on. So I would record it every night and I had a 90 minute cassette and my tape recorder would also flip so I could tape 90 minutes. So I would go to bed, turn the radio down, but record it and then listen to it the next day. And he would do these half hour specials focusing on various artists. And that's how I heard a lot of stuff back in the day. But when that was pretty much the only alternative type music, I used air quotes, everyone. I know you can't see them on the radio. The only type of alternative stuff you could get other than like the Pepsi Power Hour on Much Music and the Wedge, which came out later. But radio at that time in the late 80s and early 90s in Winnipeg was pretty much classic rock and country and pop. So to find anything, you had to midnight on CBC, late. Brent Bambury. And one day he did this feature on this garage rock guy, Billy Childish, who at that point had released like 30 albums, you know, in the decade that he had been recording. And one of the, and so that got me into Billy Childish. Billy Childish got me into The Clash, and The Clash opened up everything else.
Speaking of Brave New Ways, there's a great feature about that show on Bandcamp online recently. So for folks who missed that, go check it out. I mean, it's, for me, it was also a very foundational radio show.
Yeah.
So I don't think I'd be on this airwave if it wasn't for that.
Oh, same. I know. It's it was really influential to me, only like not only as to hear new music, but to hear that what someone could do with radio, and when they weren't being overseen by, you know, their music wasn't being programmed out of Toronto or something. You could tell he knew his stuff. He was a fan of the music. Just like we are here on UMFM.
Mm-hmm.
And he still, to this day, I still listen to Brent Bambury. He does a show on Saturdays on CBC. I don't always get up on time or remember, but I totally respect that guy's opinion. He introduced me to Billy Childish, who introduced me to Clash.
Well, speaking of getting up on time, make sure to wake up 9 to 11 on Friday mornings for Cretan Radio, and enjoy the rest of this Clash Day special. This is Career Opportunities here.
I can't wait to hear what everyone else picks.
Every job they offer used to keep you up the dock. Career opportunity, the one that never knocked. I hate the army and I hate the RAF. I don't wanna go fighting in the Germany. I hate the seven savage boom. I won't open that bomb for you. Career opportunity, the one that never knocked. Every job they offer used to kick you off the dock. Career opportunity, the one that never knocked.
Oi, 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 oi. Let's drive out, ambulance man. The dickies is breaking down. All the time. They're gonna have to introduce conscription. They're gonna have to take away my prescription. Every job they offer used to kick you out the door. Career opportunity, the one that never knocked.
Back here on International Clash Day, celebrating the legacy of both the band and of Joe Strummer. And we are joined by someone you heard earlier today on This, That, and the Third, Ian Lodowicz. How are you doing, man?
Hey, Mike. I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. I was super stoked to hear the live session that you guys did last week with David Dobbs. And I am very excited about this show on the 10th coming up. Before
Absolutely.
We get into
that session, that's a great space that you guys have at UMFM, that studio space there.
Yeah, and, no, we're really happy with it. And over the years, thanks to the Pledgerama proceeds, we've put in a kit and some backline and stuff. So it's gotten better and better.
Well, it makes all the difference, yeah. And when we recorded there with David Dobbs, it was a really good emphasis on just like capturing some really good sounds and the energy in the room, rather than like, you know, sometimes you get stuck in the studio kind of rut of perfecting everything, whereas this session we just captured all the energy of the songs and left in all the mistakes in perfect Clash form. I mean,
that's, yeah, I was gonna say, like, if anything adheres to the spirit of the Clash, it's like aggressive aggressive enthusiasm, let's say.
Yes. That's the well-articulated version of it. Perfect.
So
I was gonna say
screw ups. Okay. I you know, put a nice positive spin on it.
Absolutely. But this Clash Day, this is this is actually something that you brought to my attention, like,
yeah, this
a
is
couple months ago.
Serendipitous.
And I had no idea that it was a thing until that moment. And lo and behold, we booked a Joe Strummer tribute 3 days after International Clash Day.
So, like you said, you didn't know about Clash Day, and you were doing this tribute. So, what prompted the idea for doing the Strummer tribute then?
Well, we used to do them back in the day. The first year when Strummer passed away, it was kind of just like a knee jerk reaction. It's like, okay, we've got to do something. You know, mm-hmm. everybody wants to, you know, say their piece and get up there and play those songs. And so we put together the tribute in January of 2003, just a month after he passed away. And then those tributes were such a success for both, like, you know, we got great crowds out, and also the bands that were playing were really starting to springboard themselves up into like a bigger audience. My band Sub City Dwellers, when we used to play, we attributed some of our fan base to those shows. We play those shows year after year, and I think a lot of people found out about us through those shows. And so it went on for about 5 or 6 years. We did them in a row, and then we did one more in 2011 with my band Kids on Fire as a fundraiser for Solidarity Rock, as a foundation out of Edmonton. And then this year, you know, it was so strange. We knew, obviously, it had been 15 years since Strummer's passing. And myself and Ben Rodeker, who's my partner in putting the show together, I contacted him about it, and he said, you know, I was just thinking about this. So we figured it was kind of one of those moments. Well, yeah, just like the first year. Okay, well, we have to do this now. And it's just meant to be. And it came together so easily. I mean, something that everybody wants to be a part of, whether it's the Farrell Brothers who are headlining, playing the first all-ages show in years, maybe a decade almost.
Yeah.
And then the West End Cultural Center was very on board. There was a few years there where the West End really went kind of the folk country roots kind of way, and that was really the bread and butter, and I think it still is. But they're really interested in getting back into like the more aggressive, the punk rock and some metal shows. They're really interested in getting back into that scene. So,
which is
it was
great.
Really cool to see them on board,
because it's nice to have an all ages punk or metal venue.
Absolutely. There's the West End Cultural Center, and there's the Park Theater in town, which are both beautiful venues. But I mean, when I was growing up, we put on shows at community centers for $50, and I can't imagine, you know, young bands just starting out being able to dish out the rental for, you know, beautiful venues like the Park Theater or the West End. So unfortunately, it might be just because I'm out of contact with, you know, the teenage bands, but it doesn't seem like there's that many all ages shows, especially for like the you know, the more aggressive music scene.
Mm-hmm.
And so to have a show with, you know, the Farrell Brothers and having the Crackdown reunite, and well, the band representation in my group, Guns of Wolseley, spans about like 7 or 10 bands.
Yeah, how did you go about assembling Guns of Wolseley?
Well, that was you know, like it's a beautiful thing where you don't have to go outside your circle of very good buddies to find great players. And I've kind of just surrounded myself with really good players over the years. So I have bass player is Leif Cobé from Vibrating Beds. I also played with him, Kids on Fire. And then the drummer is Joel Lennart from S.E. Mira and Clipwing. And I also play with him in North Graffiti. And Kevin McLean on keyboards, Dale Riley on saxophone, played with me in Sub City.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, Riley Hastings on guitar, my main man. He plays with me in The Noble Thief. So it was really easy to assemble them. And, you know, just like that first year where we knew we had to do something right after Strummer's passing, it's like, it's very easy to get people on board with something that, you know, evokes such passion, like you know, Strummer did.
Yeah. So speaking of the passion for Strummer, can you think back to kind of when you first encountered either Strummer as a solo artist or The Clash? Like, which came first for you, and what can you think what record it was?
A huge audiophile, had big vinyl collection, and had all those Clash records. Even had Cut the Crap, which, I mean, which Clash fans have that?
The really...
That was the ostracized album after Mick Jones.
That's the really passionate fan right there. The completest. The completest fan. That's who owns that.
Yes, so, and so, yeah, he even had like a Kelly's Records, 1979 copy of London Calling still in its original wrapping. So my dad really played a lot of Clash, as well as, you know, Beatles, Van Morrison, a bunch of classics when I was young.
Right.
And, you know, when you're 13 years old and there's the Clash being played in your house, it's almost, you know, a chemical change. You're just kind of drawn to that type of passion and, well, aggression, but it was like a directed aggression with Strummer. It was always, you know, fight the power.
Right. So was it the music itself or like Strummer's kind of political leanings that really captured you?
No, I think when you're 13 years old, it's the music itself. It's kind of what it embodies, and embodies, you know, youth and rebellion and all that kind of stuff. And then once you start really diving into it, and you develop that relationship with the band for a few years, and you're 16 years old, you're really starting to dive into the politics of it, and you're having, you know, friends from different circles kind of teach you about the politics of that type of music. And when I was about 16 or 17, then I was a, you know, diehard Clash fan. And then when I was 17, Strummer passed away. So there you go, full circle. That's when we started the tributes.
Sure enough. Now, I want to get you to pick a track from the Clash or Strummer catalog, and if you have a reason why you're picking that song in particular. I always like to hear kind of the explanation or resonance of that song.
Well, I loved his stuff with Mescaleros in his later life. That stuff was just awesome. When they put that out on Hellcat Records, Tim Armstrong from Rancid put it out, and the first album was a flop, financially, and, you know, the tour was a flop around it. But I mean, growing up on Joe Strummer, Tim Armstrong said that he would just keep on putting out Strummer's records no matter how many of them flopped. So I just love those ones. Global Go-Go was just such a... That was one of his masterpieces. That was like, you know, a straight-to-hell style masterpiece, that album. And the title track, Global Go-Go, track 3, just awesome. And it's too bad that, like, you know, with having so many great bands play this tribute this weekend... we had such a limited amount of time that we went for a bunch of Clash classics, and we weren't able to incorporate any Mescaleros tunes into our set. Maybe next year. Maybe. So I'm gonna have to pick a Mescaleros track. So let's go with "Global Go-Go" by Joe Strummer and Mescaleros.
Let's do that. And tickets for the show on Saturday is still available. Ticketfly.com, and I think there's a link through WECC.ca, the West End's site as well.
There's still a few at Into the Music at their new location in Osborne Village, where Music Trader used to be.
Right on. So,
I estimate by Thursday or Friday, if you wait till then, hit it up online right now.
Do it. Yeah, you're listening to this
because it's going to sell up.
Go check it out, Ian. Thanks for joining us here and making a pick. And happy International Clash Day, man.
Happy International Clash Day, Mike. Thanks for bringing it to my attention. That's fantastic. In 3 days' time, we're gonna bring it to the stage.
World Service Bulletin. Hey!
All right, welcome back to International Clash Day, spotlighting the music and legacy of The Clash and Joe Strummer. And joining us now, Clash superfan and your average lady about town, Natasha Ross. How are you doing, Natasha?
Very good, thanks.
So did you know about Clash Day before we called you?
This is the first year I think I've seen so much advertising around it, and it's specifically a show coming up on Saturday celebrating Clash Day.
Yes, we talked to Ian, who was organizing that show a little earlier in the program, and we're excited about that show too. So what's your relationship with the Clash? Like, can you remember the first song or the first album that you heard from them?
Well, I feel like there have been snippets of the Clash in, you know, various times of my life, but I remember seeing it was probably Rock the Casbah on maybe video hits. And, you know, being really young, maybe 10, and kind of thinking that was kind of cool. And then hearing it a lot at junior high dances, they'd play Should I Stay or Should I Go? And, you know, that was always a favorite song a few of us liked to dance to. But it still really, there wasn't a huge Clash presence for that time in my age group.
Right.
So that was kind of the beginnings. And then I think when I was in my early 20s, I started to really expand my Clash collection and appreciate their music even more.
Was it a punk thing, or was it kind of the reggae influences? Like, what drew you back to them in your 20s?
I didn't even know how. I couldn't quite understand fully the punk influence that I do better now, but because there were other kind of, it seemed, more punk bands I was listening to. And then I think it was the broad range of sounds that the Clash had. There was some, you know, dub and reggae, and, you know, there was some really kind of, you know, punk kind influences. So I think that's what I loved about them, is you could hear so many different things in all the different albums. And then later on, when Joe Strummer and the Mascaleros was doing stuff, that was also a very different sound.
So you followed on to Joe's sort of solo slash band outside of the Clash?
Yeah, I mean, I love his voice, and I have a big crush. I had a big crush on Joe Strummer, so I definitely followed him along the years.
Now, a few of the folks that we've talked to said, like, kind of like the political messaging or sort of the, like, socio-political part of it resonated with them. Was that something that affected you as well?
Yeah, I mean, not only did they have this kind of broad range of sounds, but they had these powerful messages about hard times and power imbalances and, you know, and I was always very interested in sort of British culture, so they were talking about things that were going on in their upbringings, and yeah, so I thought I really kind of, it spoke to me, all their messages spoke to me as a kind of developing teen and into my 20s.
Right. Now, I'm going to get you to pick a track, but I want you to kind of not necessarily explain it, but like give us some context for why it's the song you're selecting.
Oh, selecting a song. Well, that would be tough, but I was thinking about it, and I really love car jamming, and it kind of reminds me of just one camping summer year or a summer camping with my girlfriend, and we just were playing combat rock a lot, and every time car jamming came on, we kind of, you know, got really excited and did some dancing by the fire.
So is it kind of like makes you nostalgic for that experience of dancing
totally.
With your friend?
Yeah. So I would say that's a good memory song for me for sure.
All right. Well, we will play that one, and hopefully, while you're listening, maybe your friend will feel the vibes in the ether.
Awesome. Okay. Well, thanks so much.
Thanks for joining us, Natasha. Enjoy the rest of Clash Day.
Okay. Bye bye.
Holy set of blast, well,
All right. Well, we are back here on International Clash Day, celebrating the legacy of the band and of the man, Joe Strummer. And joining us on the line, music reviewer for the Free Press and the man who helped save the Tragically Hip, John Kendall.
Hi, Michael. How are you?
I'm good. Yourself?
Good, good.
So, I mean, you obviously have a strong association with several bands, but I'm curious about your association with The Clash. Like, how did you first hear them? Do you recall, like, which record it was? Or
yeah, I do, actually. I had heard of them in 77 or 78 because I was an avid reader of Cream magazine, America's only rock and roll magazine, the great Cream of the 1970s, with people like Robert Christgau and David DiMartino writing for it. And then my father was a history professor at the university, and we had a sabbatical year in the UK in 1978-79.
That's fortuitous.
So, yeah, I arrived in a village called Horsepath, just outside of Oxford, in June of 1978 as a just-turned 13-year-old Kiss fan, and emerged a year later as a fully-fledged Clash fan. And it was Give 'Em Enough Rope was the album that came out that year. I believe it was September or October of 78. It was the Sandy Pearlman produced follow-up to the fantastic first record. And Tommy Gunn was a song for which they actually did a video, and it played on Top of the Pops the very week that the single was released. It was the first single from the record, and I was an immediate convert. If you go back and look at that video again, and in fact I did last night in preparation for doing this, and they just literally leap into the camera with their energy, and Strummer's lyric about the cheapness of life and death in a militaristic world rings true even today, you know, 40 years later. And I was a huge convert from then on, and they've been probably my favorite band since.
So 13-year-old John Kendall, during like the heyday of British punk rock, did you have like friends that you made while you were there that have remained like lifelong punk friends? Or?
No, not really, because it was difficult in the pre-internet days to stay in touch. Right,
oh,
you had to write
enough
letters, and
that's
not
very
many 14- and 15-year-olds were doing that, right?
Yeah, true enough, and it's not very punk to sit down and write a letter.
It just wasn't very teenage to sit down and write a letter. No, but what I did while I was there was I became a subscriber to Melody Maker, which was one of the four major British weekly music newspapers, if you can believe four major weekly newspapers devoted to music at the time. And I saved all those issues, and I made an exhaustive list of the albums that I wanted to buy. Now, I didn't buy any while we were there, largely because my parents were concerned about bringing stuff back with shipping fees and that sort of thing.
Right.
When we came back to Canada in 1979, I became a scourer of downtown record bins, Records on Wheels in particular, because they had the best imports. And Mothers and later on Pepper Records across from the University of Winnipeg were regular haunts of mine on Saturday afternoons for years. And I slowly but surely built up that record collection. And that set me on a path which ultimately has led me to, 40 years later, doing what I do.
Yeah. So I want to get you to pick a Clash track, as we're doing with everyone, and if you have a reason why you're picking that song in particular, or if there's like an anecdote about the song, why it resonates?
I'm choosing White Men in Hammersmith Palais, which was a single that the band put out after the British pressing of the first album came out. It's on the blue label North American pressing, but it was not on the original green label UK pressing. It was a single after the fact. And it was a song that Joe Strummer wrote after looking to broaden his musical horizons. He went to a reggae show at Hammersmith Palais and came away from it rather disappointed. I think he had a bit of a romantic notion of the essence of Jamaican reggae and roots reggae and ska music. And the show that he went to see featured Jamaican reggae bands that had been influenced heavily by Motown, as many of them were. And the song, set to a quasi-reggae beat, becomes a reflection on show business, which leads him to reflect on what it's like to be a punk in 1978, which is when the single came out, as opposed to what it was like to be a punk in 1976. There's a line about the new groups are not concerned with what there is to be learned. And they got Burton suits. They think it's funny turning rebellion into money. Even then, he was very suspicious of, as the Clash were throughout their career, the business side of music and the showbiz side of music. And White Man in Hammersmith Palais, with a brilliant arrangement by Mick Jones, has this fantastic lyric about what it means to be the Clash, really. And it's a song that's remained with me to this day. And in fact, I have a T-shirt which bears some of the lyrics from White Man in Hammersmith Palais that I wear regularly. It's kind of a silhouette of Strummer's face in white on black, with the lyric, "I'm an all-night drug prowling wolf who feels so sick inside." Goes on, "I'm a white man in Hammersmith Palais only looking for fun." And therefore, having given this lengthy spiel, I think you realize it resonates still very much with me. And the Clash is a band that if I was into getting tattoos, I'd probably have a Clash tattoo somewhere.
That makes sense. Well, John, thanks very much for sharing your pick, and enjoy the rest of International Clash Day.
Well, I'll be playing the Clash all day, as you guys will, and I'll be listening as well.
Right.
Well, that pretty much it does it for this edition of At Large, our special International Clash Day edition. My thanks to Jared Mikidiak, Dom Lloyd, Alexis Bisbalko, Sam Thompson, Ian Ludowicz, Natasha Ross, and John Kendall for sharing their picks over the last hour and a half. We got time for me to shoehorn my pick in right here at the end from Sandinista. Police on My Back. I can't get enough of the fact that they make the guitar sound like sirens on this one. Just love that effect. And hopefully you've heard something you hadn't heard before or something that you love, and this has inspired you to go seek out the discographies of Joe Strummer and The Clash. Enjoy the rest of it here on 101.5 UMFM.